This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscowen. Gays and lesbians do not have the same civil rights protection as heterosexuals. If they face discrimination in housing or on the job based on sexual orientation, they have no recourse under current federal laws. So says Hai Feldblum, a civil rights attorney and activist who's trying to change that. She's a visiting professor at Georgetown University Law Center and director of policy for the newly formed Campaign for Military Service, which is working to lift the ban on gays in the armed forces. She's also helping to draft a new civil rights bill for gays, lesbians, and bisexuals. Currently, a patchwork of state and local laws exist. Some state and local legislatures have enacted laws which protect the rights of homosexuals. Some, like Colorado, have banned laws to protect those rights. I asked Feldblum why a federal law is needed.
I would love if the world was such that we did not need a federal law to protect the civil rights of anybody. The problem is that discrimination exists. Discrimination existed against African Americans, so we needed to pass the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Discrimination existed against people with disabilities, so Congress needed to pass the Americans with Disabilities Act. In this day and age, there was widespread discrimination against gay men, lesbians, and bisexuals. And there needs to be a federal law that says that discrimination is illegal in order for these individuals to have protection.
Let me tell you about an argument I heard recently, and this was on the radio. I heard someone say that there was a distinction between the discrimination against homosexuals and the discrimination against African Americans. And what he said was that homosexuals had never been denied a seat at the front of the bus or denied the right to vote or forced to use separate bathroom facilities the way the blacks have. The implication of the argument was that somehow the discrimination was less total and therefore less insidious and therefore needing of less protection.
I heard that person talk on the radio, and I mentioned it to my class, which I teach at Georgetown, and I teach a class in sexual orientation and the law, and I asked my students what they thought about that. And it was interesting because both the gay and the straight students felt that the argument was completely misplaced, as I do. The reason black people were sent to the back of the bus was because people knew that they were black. You couldn't hide that. The reason gay men and lesbians and bisexuals have been able to get on the bus and get into restaurants and walk around the streets is that nobody knows necessarily that they're gay or lesbian or bisexual unless they say so or unless they seem to clearly fit the stereotype of being a gay man or a lesbian. If someone overtly fits those stereotypes, then those people often cannot walk down the streets without fear of danger, without fear of someone actually harming them. And if the person does come out and say, I am a gay man, I am a lesbian or a bisexual, then in fact they do experience the same extent of discrimination, potentially in employment and housing and restaurants and bars.
Let me ask you about a case that the Supreme Court ruled on in the mid-'80s. It was a case from Georgia, Bowers versus Hardwick.
Yes.
Tell us about that case, and tell us why this is such an important case in the gay and lesbian community.
Mm-hmm. Bowers versus Hardwick was a challenge to the sodomy law of Georgia. That sodomy law prohibited oral sex between people of the same sex as well as between people of the opposite sex. Homosexuals and heterosexuals were both covered under this sodomy law. The Supreme Court, however, decided to view the law as just applying to homosexuals, and it said that the state of Georgia had the right to make homosexual sodomy illegal and that gay people did not have a constitutional right of privacy to their sexual activity.
And what are the implications, then, of that ruling?
The implications are enormous and incredibly devastating. Although most gay men and lesbians are not prosecuted under sodomy laws, so there is not an immediate implication of someone coming into a person's house and prosecuting them under the law, the fact that the Supreme Court has ruled that the sexual activity of gay people can be criminalized has been used as the basis in numerous other cases dealing with employment, dealing with housing, dealing with family matters to rule against gay people on the reasoning that gay people are essentially criminals in half of the states in this country.
Why do you think the Supreme Court ruled the way it did?
You know, it's interesting. I clerked for Justice Blackmun right after that case came down. So I came to the Supreme Court literally a week after Bowers was handed down. And it was a very interesting experience for me to walk around that courthouse a week after they had ruled that I was illegal in half of the states of this country. So I thought about that question. Mm. Why did they rule this way? And I think they ruled that way because there was not a true understanding of who gay men, lesbians, and bisexuals are. As I'm sure you know, Justice Powell announced publicly that he changed his vote in that case. So this case could have come out the other way, 5-4, if Justice Powell had gone with the side written by Justice Blackmun that the right of privacy, if it means anything, means the right to control one's own sexual activities. But I think that the justices were affected by the social constructions that this society has created about homosexuality. And those constructions are that homosexuality is sinful, it's bad, it's immoral, and that if you allowed homosexuality to be protected, where would you then draw the line? I think if the justices of the Supreme Court, as well as the people of the country, begin to accept, as I believe they are, that homosexuality is simply gay people and lesbians loving each other in a way that is not immoral and not bad, I think Bowers versus Hardwick will come out the other way.
My guest is Hai Feldblum, and she's the director of policy for the Campaign for Military Service, working to ensure that the ban on gays serving in the military is lifted. She's also a visiting professor at Georgetown University Law Center in Washington, D.C. How would a federal gay rights bill be worded?
Well, it would track the different areas in which discrimination exists, and it would cover employment and housing, businesses that are open to the public, the federal and state governments. And it would basically literally track the language of existing civil rights laws so that gay men and lesbians are not getting special rights, but are getting rights that are equal to the rights that are currently set forth in laws that protect people on the basis of race, sex, religion, national origin, and disability.
So you would look to the 1964 Civil Rights Act?
Correct. Our models in writing this law will be the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and 1968, which covers housing, and the Americans with Disabilities Act that was just passed in 1990.
What is the procedure, then, for introducing a bill like this, and how do you shepherd it through Congress?
Well, actually, a number of us have been working over the past weeks, number of civil rights groups, to help draft a bill that that members of Congress will introduce. A member of Congress in the House and a senator, you know, or senators in the Senate will then introduce the bill. There will be hearings on the bill, and then the bill will go forward just as any other bill does, for a vote in the relevant committees and then on the House and Senate floors. I think all of us expect that this will be a process, a development of both the law and a development of support for the bill so that ultimately there will be a majority of votes for the bill in both the House and the Senate.
Are you using the word process as another word of saying it will be a hard sell?
I'm using process to mean that I don't think the bill could be introduced next Monday and passed the following Monday. I think it's going to take some time. I'm not sure I would call it a hard sell. 5 years ago, I would have told you that I think it would take 20 years to get this bill passed. Now, I believe this bill could get passed within the next 4 years. I believe that the American public has changed in very significant ways in realizing that discrimination is simply unfair and has no place in this country.
You know, I'm really surprised to hear you say that, only because there was such an uproar about the issue of gays in the military. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to talk radio at all, you can certainly get a feel for at least the more vocal parts of the public are very much against this idea.
Uh-huh. I think that's true. And I think there are two things that we take from the response to gays in the military. One is that that issue will have to be resolved before the gay civil rights bill, you know, moves forward in any significant way. And I expect over the next 6 months, and part of what the coalition, the campaign, will be working on, is trying to reach out to the American public and change the points of view. I think there is a very large, non-vocal majority of this country that believes that, as Barry Goldwater, I believe it was Barry Goldwater, said, the issue is whether you can shoot straight, not whether you are straight. And I think that a lot of people, basically in their gut, believe that that's the case. So number one, I think that ultimately the ban on the military will be lifted, that the public will ultimately be in favor of that. And then in an ironic way, I think that that will help us with the gay civil rights bill, because if you listen to the senators and members of Congress on the floor, they keep talking about how the military is different from the rest of society. It's so different, and you know, the showers and the this and the that. And as one of my friends said, listening to Senator Thurman, he addressed Senator Thurman on the TV screen and said, you know, Senator Thurman, a lot of jobs we're talking about don't have any showers. So you see, the thing is, once people realize that having gays in the military is actually not going to be a devastating thing, will not affect morale and discipline, and people will be able to get along, then, of course, there shouldn't be a problem letting gay men and lesbians be open in the workplace and be open in a restaurant and be open in their housing.
We have to take a very short break, but first let me reintroduce my guest today on Fresh Air. She's Hai Feldblum, and she's a visiting professor at Georgetown University Law Center in Washington, D.C. She's also the director of policy for the Campaign for Military Service, working to ensure the ban on gays in the military is lifted. We'll be back after a very short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Hai Feldblum, and she's a visiting professor at Georgetown University Law Center in Washington, D.C. If homosexuals are given equal protection under the law and are accorded civil rights as everyone else has, will we see then same-sex marriages being legalized? Or will we see companies having to give health insurance to same-sex domestic partners? Will we see child custody laws, adoption laws being changed?
Well, you've touched on all the issues that I expect members of Congress to ask us when we bring forward the gay civil rights bill. I think it's best to think of it maybe as a staged process. A gay civil rights law would not necessarily mandate same-sex marriages because Congress can write the law any way that it wants. It could mandate same-sex marriages. But I think what we're more likely to see is basic protections in employment and housing and access to goods and services being passed. As part of that, I do think that there will be a fight about insurance benefits, because I think the gay community will appropriately argue that just as spouses get benefits such as health benefits and bereavement, etc., we deserve the same benefits for our partners. So I think that will be asked for in a civil rights bill. I don't know if Congress will decide to pass that. I think the last thing that will happen, when it happens, and it's, I think, a long way down the line, is same-sex marriage. I think that a lot of other forms of discrimination will be eradicated from this society. I think that we will have domestic partnership laws set up that will give us the equivalent of marriage without the name. And then the last thing, the element that will really show that the social construction of being gay has changed from something immoral and sinful to something that is simply another way of loving somebody, will be when states are comfortable in according marriage licenses.
You're involved in this new group, the Campaign for Military Service. Mm-hmm. What are you doing, in terms of a procedure and direction? How are you going to argue this issue or educate the public or educate members of Congress on this issue of gay and lesbian civil rights?
Well, the basic premise on which the military bases its exclusion of gay men and lesbians, bisexuals from the military is that other people in the military could not handle being around openly gay people. That is the basic underlying premise for the ban. That is exactly the premise that was used to say that black people cannot serve with white people in the army because white people would simply be too uncomfortable. And I think the answer to that in the military as well as anywhere else has to be that you cannot cater and condone and approve other people's prejudices. You have to work to change them. And sometimes, just as with African Americans, the only way to change that prejudice is to simply say, as a federal policy, we will not condone discrimination. These people can serve openly, and now let's work together to get used to it.
When talking about the issue of privacy in the military, it seems that the fear, as I understand it, and let's just take men are taking a shower together. Mm-hmm. There are straight men and gay men in the shower together. If a gay man is attracted to a straight man and the feeling is not mutual, is there a privacy violation going on in that shower because of the one-way attraction?
I think that question is based on a premise that sort of doesn't really exist in reality. I can't begin to tell you the number of gay people who have said to me since this has come up, why do these straight people keep thinking we're so attracted to them? You know, we're not. We're attracted, usually, to other gay men. In fact, Barney Frank said to Dan Coats, I've been taking showers with you for years in the gym. It hasn't been a problem. This is in the congressional gym. I think the idea that gay men or lesbian women, if you're taking a shower together, that the gay person will, A, necessarily be attracted to the straight person, and B, even if the person was at some point in their back of their mind, that they would do anything that is untoward or inappropriate is simply not the case. I mean, I can tell you from personal experience, I would not at all approach a straight woman because I would just be afraid to approach a straight woman if she's clearly not interested. So I think that the premise is simply not true in terms of how things operate. I also think it's interesting to note, and again, this has been mentioned to me by others, that men are finally realizing what sexual harassment might feel like to women. And their fear that there might be someone who will harass them and they can't protect themselves is overwhelming. Now, in reality, as I just said to you, I don't think there will be any harassment the way there is harassment from men to women. But even the concept that they might be the objects of unwanted attention scares these men like crazy.
Before this issue of gays in the military became such a feisty political one, within the gay and lesbian community, was that considered the number one issue, the issue that you felt had the greatest implications for other rights?
Mm-hmm. Well, 3 years ago, when I was at the ACLU as their lobbyist on gay rights issues as well as AIDS and disability, we were focusing at that point on gays in the military for the reason that it was the one remaining institutionalized form of discrimination in this country. That is, it was a major federal institution that mandated discrimination. I mean, private employers and private landlords had the right to discriminate, but there was no mandate of discrimination. And here was an institution that had a mandate of discrimination against gay men, lesbians, and bisexuals. So this is not a new issue for the gay community. 3 years ago, when I was working on this issue, working on the general issue of gay rights, gays in the military was definitely on the top of our list as something that simply had to be changed. We also felt that that was simply one small portion of society, and what we really needed to achieve ultimately was freedom and civil rights and protection for gay men, lesbians, and bisexuals in all sectors of society.
You certainly get the feeling that many in this country believe that homosexuality is a sin, that many homosexuals choose their sexual orientation. And as a lawyer, how do you argue this when you're talking about religious feelings, emotional feelings, psychological feelings?
I think that's difficult. I think that people have the right to their feelings and emotions about anything, and no one has the right to tell anyone else what to think in their own minds. I think the law has the obligation to stop people from acting on those feelings when it will hurt other people. If someone wants to believe that the fact that I'm bisexual is a sin and bad and immoral, that is their right. But I believe that my country has the right to protect me, and my country, I'm sorry, has the obligation to protect me from that person acting out on those feelings and hurting me. I think the fact that so many people have had, I think the fact that there's a history of homosexuality being sinful and immoral and bad is what we have to counter with education and information and actual experiences of gay men, lesbians, and bisexuals, because otherwise we really never will change things in this society.
Hi, Feldblum. Thank you very much for joining us today on Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Hi, Feldblum is a visiting professor at Georgetown University Law Center and director of policy for the Campaign for Military Service, working to lift the ban on gays in the armed forces. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne, and this is Fresh Air.